Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Sidoti Group of Steward Partners Semi-Annual Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touchtone phone. You may withdraw yourself from the queue by pressing star and two. Please note this call may be recorded. I'll be standing by if you should need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Casey Snyder. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Travis, and welcome everyone. Casey Snyder and Tom Sidoric here, and we hope everyone's summer is off to a good start despite some of the erratic weather for those in the Northeast. And we know how precious summer days are, so we thank you for making time for this afternoon's The Sidoric Group's regularly scheduled semi-annual conference call. Today's format will be similar to our call in February, as Tom and I attempt to provide important context by addressing six themes that impact our overall financial well-being. And these six themes are, first, equities. We're going to talk about valuations in 2022 and 2023, growth versus value, and the lopsided nature of performance so far in 2023 and sort of what's working and what's not. Second, we're going to speak about the infamous bond market after coming off of its worst year in 240 years. And why higher yields are important and beneficial. Third, inflation. Everyone feels it. You know, 5 years ago, many people believed it would never return, and now many people believe it will never go away. Fourth, we're going to discuss the most publicized and anticipated recession of all time. We discussed on our last call how when everyone is convinced a market-related event will happen, it rarely does in the manner that was expected. Fifth, we'll discuss our investment outlook from where we are today as a long-term investor and a long-term planner, and some of the actionable ideas that we either have or may incorporate within portfolios moving forward. And then sixth and lastly, we'll want to discuss what we believe will be phenomenal change over the next 5, 10, 15 plus years. And this really picks up from where we left off on our February call, when we asked everyone to reflect on the last 5 to 10 years of their life and envision within reason how their life may change over the next 5 to 10 years. Now, before we jump into an update on equities, we have three quick housekeeping items. First, as always, we will leave time for Q&A at the end, as well as provide a brief practice update. Second, by the end of the month, we will be posting a slide deck of the themes discussed today. Knowing that visuals are often helpful when it comes to digesting financial-related subjects. And once the slide deck is live, we will be emailing it to everyone for you to digest and share at your leisure. And then third, we've received a number of referrals lately, and people have been asking if we are accepting new clients. We are accepting new clients, but we do maintain a self-imposed new client limit of 6 to 8 new relationships per year, to ensure our capacity to be available when life events present themselves, and to maintain our service model. And Erica Kelly's addition and the evolution of roles within our team will eventually allow for us to increase this number to 8 to 10 and maybe more, but we're not there quite yet. So with that, let us begin. And Tom, in some respects, we sit here today with a very different investment environment than we did a year ago. And in other respects, some of the concerns that we have shared or expressed remain. So let's start today by discussing U.S. equities, which is our first theme. And I want to start with valuations. So will you share your thoughts on how valuations have changed since the beginning of 2022 and why this matters so much?
Sure. And thank you, Casey. And thank you all for joining us today. We're grateful for your attendance. We know it's not a great time of the year to host a conference call or party. A better time for a party, actually, but we're glad you're here with us. So valuations, as we talked about earlier in the year, coming into 2022, were obscenely expensive. And when I say obscene, we're talking about 4 standard deviations away from the norm. That is incredibly rich. 2023, because of the corrections in 2022, things got cheaper, but never really truly cheap. So we have tried to prepare you emotionally and mentally for a potential second leg down in the equity markets in the U.S. It could happen. It may not. But valuations do impact long-term returns, and the opportunity set today is much better than it was certainly at the beginning of 2022 for a number of factors that we'll discuss today, but particularly because equity prices have come down. Remember, the law of gravity hasn't been undone yet, though, and that is the term mean regression. So asset values tend to regress to the mean over time, and they're likely to do it this time as well.
So, Tom, so what we're discussing here is the U.S. market as a whole, but if we peel back some of the layers, there seems to be a significant difference in performance between growth-oriented companies and value-oriented companies. So will you talk about the differences between these two categories and first maybe define them so everybody knows what we're talking about here?
Sure. Growth typically are the go-go stocks, the companies that typically don't have a dividend to pay out, but they're growing rapidly. And you can think about the technology companies, the Amazons, the Apples, the Netflixes. And these are not solicitations, by the way, but these are typical names in the growth index. You remember us talking earlier about FANG, which is an acronym for a number of high growth stocks, which over the last decade have done exceedingly well, in fact, a little too well. And they trumped value stocks quite significantly. Value lagged. Value in 2022 picked up quite dramatically as growth sold off. Value has outperformed during other eras, the 1980s, which is where I cut my teeth in investing. And there seems a similarity today, and there's certainly a nice similarity to the 1940s, anecdotally, as we came off a wartime economy to a peacetime economy. And value held up in 2022, but has barely budged in 2023 thus far, as growth has had a snapback rally, which may be short-lived or may be permanent.
So, Tom, when you talk about growth snapback rally and value having barely budged, if we peel back another layer on this and discuss something called market breadth, which is a measure of how uniform the rise or fall of a market is, because what we're seeing right now is a bit unusual.
Very much so, and it's been a real concern. It's something we've talked about in prior calls. We talk about market breadth. So most indices for the year are positive, but it's certainly not uniform, and it's certainly not broad. Through May 31st, of the 11 different sectors making up the S&P 500, only three, which are information technology, communication services, and consumer discretionary, are positive. And only about 45% of the Russell 2000, which is an index of small companies, are profitable this year. The top 10 stocks represent over 30% of the S&P 500 market cap this year. And through the first half of the year, only eight companies delivered 78% of the S&P's total return, with the other 492 companies were barely 3%. Concentrations like this, we always suggest you proceed with caution and don't invest in the rearview mirror.
Yeah, and I won't name this company for compliance reasons, but the largest company within the S&P 500 now makes up around 7.5% of the S&P 500. And to put that in perspective, this company's $3 trillion market cap is around the same size as the entire UK stock market, which is comprised of around 595 companies and has a larger market cap than Germany's stock market as a whole. So this is a bit unusual, but not unheard of. And for example, there was an article within the Wall Street Journal within the past few years that referenced how AT&T made up 13% of the U.S. stock market in the early 1930s. General Motors was around 8% of the market in 1928. And IBM had a 7% weighting in 1970. It was close to that again by 1985. But the point of this is that concentrations happen, but they also evolve over time. And for our compliance department, this was not a solicitation or a recommendation to buy or sell any of what I just mentioned.
Nicely Tom, done, Casey, but why can't we talk about a fruit? I don't get it. Sorry.
Thank you. So let's move away, though, from the ever-popular stock market to the less beloved and less understood bond market, which suffered its worst return in approximately 240 years in 2022. And at risk of belaboring what transpired in the bond market in 2022, Tom, will you provide a quick summary of what happened and why it was so extreme?
Something we've never seen before because we weren't alive, but the last time the bond market behaved as it did in 2022 was 1840. That's a long time ago. And what was meant to happen gradually in the bond market over perhaps 4 to 6 years actually occurred in a period as short as 13 months. And since everything in the world is directly or indirectly tied to interest rates and hence bonds, low rates, as you might recall in an earlier call, we talked about the funhouse mirror effect, how low interest rates over the last better part of the last decade distorted asset prices. Everything in the world appeared more attractive than bonds because interest rates were so incredibly low. So it distorted real estate, equities, emerging markets, you name it, it distorted crypto, there you go. But bonds are now attractive again. And so what was the ugly duckling is now the beautiful swan once again. And they provide a nice alternative to equities with less volatility and may be providing a slight headwind for equities as well. And these higher interest rates are also happening at a very opportune time for many of us boomers. So as we approach retirement and want more income from our investments, bonds are actually now paying a real income. How nice.
Yeah, and I know I've said this before, but I don't think people appreciated how challenging our world was going to become with 0% interest rates. Now, if you think about how were retirees, life insurance companies, long-term care providers, or pensions, how are they supposed to keep up with the high cost of inflation and promises that they made years ago if returns from their conservative bond portfolio continued to be well below what they were modeling? And the reality is they weren't. And instead, they were on the brink of dramatically raising premiums and or reducing benefits. So I think as much as people love the topic of equities in the stock market, higher yields are a really big deal and have us pretty excited over here. So, but intertwined with the subject of interest rates is theme three today, that being inflation. So we want to spend a few minutes talking about inflation, and it's interesting because this was a subject that a few people paid much attention to for the better part of the past decade. Most were worried about deflation, and many wrote off inflation as being dead forever. And now many people discuss inflation as if it will never go away or as if it's here to stay. So, Tom, will you speak a little bit about what we're seeing with inflation and why it's such a complicated topic?
It is complicated. And the last time we really had significant inflation was when I was just kind of cutting my teeth in the investment world in the 1970s, early 80s. But one thing we know for sure is that inflation, as they originally started talking about it being transitory, it is not. It is here to stay, but it is certainly beginning to ease. So I don't think we're going back to a period similar to the 1970s where double digits rule the roost. We're seeing a reorganization of supply chains. I'll go back to the analogy of the 1940s again about how the economy is restructuring. And this is basic supply and demand. So inflation was certainly a factor, but it is starting to ease. And a tight labor market and wage growth make inflation a bit more sticky. And Mr. Powell is certainly doing his job to quell inflation. But as we talked about in our last call, he is now doing it without the aid of Congress. So Congress is supposed to be, in an ideal world, Congress would be ideally trying to reduce the size of the federal government, trying to reduce the amount of federal spending, and that is certainly not the case with the Inflation Reduction Act, which might have well been an Inflation Enhancement Act. So we think more rate hikes are likely to happen, and higher interest rates for longer may be something that people should anticipate. And again, not necessarily a bad thing for those of us that are approaching retirement and want some income from our conservative money. So this is not a replay of the 1970s, but it certainly may rhyme a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think we're surprised at all that it's taking longer than many expected for inflation and interest rates to find their new norm. You know, 13 or 14 years of artificially low rates create many distortions, as you've said in the past, Tom, with the funhouse mirror analogy, and those distortions take time to resolve, especially when the world has changed so much since the great financial crisis. And it's the resurgence of this non-transitory bout of inflation that leads us to our fourth theme, which is the most publicized and anticipated recession of all time. And this is something that we discussed during our last call because of, again, how when it comes to markets and the economy, when everyone in the room believes something will happen, rarely does it happen in the manner that was expected. So, Tom, I'm going to ask you to rub your magic eight ball, dust it off, and from your perspective, do you think we are likely to see a recession? And if so, what's taken so long?
That's a terrific question. I wish I had all the answers, but I will say one thing. Recessions are normal, and they happen, quite frequently. We may not like them much. We may not recall them, but they do happen, and they do create opportunities. A recession does appear likely because of the inverted yield curve we've talked about in prior calls. But this recession may in fact be a shallow one because of some of the labor issues I talked about, and it may be more protracted. So we've been talking to many of you privately about what we would call an L-shaped recession, because many of the recessions in the past that we've experienced in the last 15 or 20 years have been relatively short-lived, even 08 and 09, where it was more of a V-shaped recession. This one may be more protracted like the 1970s. But as I said, the inverted yield curve has preceded many a recession, and the yield curve is very inverted right now. And rising interest rates typically precede a recession. We've certainly had that in the last 13 months. There are, however, some opposing factors. We talked about low household service debt ratios and labor market shortages, which may or may not be hugely inflationary. Wage growth in lower income brackets is inflationary, but student loan repayment would be deflationary. So there are a lot of countervailing winds flowing in the economy currently. And one thing, last thing, which we'll talk about a little bit more in greater detail, is the high, huge cash balances sitting on the sidelines right now, waiting for the economy to normalize. It can be put to work more efficiently.
Yeah, and typically, Tom, I think those high cash balances are associated with market bottoms, not market tops. So there's a lot of, you know, kind of factors at odds with one another right now. I think for additional context from a high-level perspective, if we look back on the past 90 years or so, the economy's been in recession about 16% of the time, meaning the other 84% of the time, the economy was in expansion. And from a market perspective, 6 out of every 10 years has seen stock market gains in excess of 10%, and only about 1 out of every 8 years has experienced a double-digit down year, last year being a great example of that. But as much as we love averages because of how they help with context, we also know that when markets move against our own desired timelines, it can be really frustrating. And that's when the value of planning and having a process really shines and is really meant to help improve long-term net returns. And again, a good example of this is 2022. It was an ugly year, but with important silver linings and opportunities. And as we mentioned before, down years provide many investors with opportunities. And one of those opportunities last year for many investors was the ability for tax loss harvesting, which in the long term is meant to help people save on taxes. And if you save on taxes, in turn, it improves net returns over time. And this brings us to our fifth theme of today's call, which are some thoughts and actionable ideas for the months and years ahead, as we recognize that the opportunity set today is different than it was a year ago, but that important concerns remain. So first, I want to talk about cash. Inflation and higher rates change the safety and security of holding excess cash. And banks have been very slow to raise deposit yields despite issuing mortgages at substantially higher rates. Now, 2-year Treasury yields recently topped 5%. That's a yield that we haven't seen since 2007. And to put the rise of rates in perspective, since the beginning of 2001, at least as of last week, it was only the 65th day when the 2-year yield has traded above 5%. That's pretty remarkable. And what this translates to is that conservative investments beyond that of cash are back in favor. So from an investment perspective, now higher rates mean we've been reevaluating bond strategies and in some cases increasing risk profiles now that rates are within a range that justifies the risk. And in other situations, we've been able to reduce overall risk profiles because of there now being an alternative to equities and other higher risk investments. You know, Silicon Valley Bank and others were caught reaching for yield when risks did not justify the reward, and the equation has since changed. I think second, and to reiterate something that Tom has already touched on, with equity valuations lower today than a year ago, and with interest rates back in favor, the outlook for long-term returns has improved, and in some areas pretty dramatically. Overseas valuations and projections are really attractive from our perspective, and this bodes well for savers and retirees. Again, we don't think the public appreciated how dire the outlook was at the beginning of 2022 and how livelihoods would have had to adjust or change if the outlook didn't improve. Third, it may be international equities' time to shine. So U.S. and international equities have a long history of being cyclical. Now, one category outperforms the other for periods of time before the trend reverses itself. And for example, from 1970 through mid-2014, the cumulative returns of the S&P 500 index and the MSCI EAFE, which is the international index, they were nearly identical over those 44 years despite being cyclical. And it's only been since 2014 that the S&P really raced ahead, and it was largely attributed to two factors: the appreciation of the U.S. dollar and U.S. tech supremacy. Both factors we see facing potential headwinds as we look ahead. And I think the strength of the U.S. dollar is often an aspect that is underappreciated or not well understood. So when the dollar strengthens, it provides a tailwind for U.S. equities and a headwind for international equities. And October of 2022 may have marked the end of the U.S. dollar strengthening cycle that began back in October 2011. And if so, coupled with cheaper valuations and higher dividends, international equities may be primed for success. And I think most people would be very surprised to hear that over the past 1.6 years, to be exact, international equities have narrowly outperformed the S&P despite the war in Ukraine and some very serious geopolitical events, but it's true. Our fourth and last actionable item here today is an important strategy that we've now brought up over the past few updates, but we want to remind everybody again, and that is the importance of dividends, especially if we experience protracted market recovery following the next recession, whenever that may be, you know, to Tom's point earlier, more of an L-shaped recovery at some point. And the magic of compounding, the eighth wonder of the world, cannot be overstated. And sure, we know for savers, it can appear boring during those earlier years, but compounding takes time. And for those nearing retirement or in retirement, you know, dividends have been a historically reliable source of income that tends to keep pace with inflation and doesn't have the variability that bond markets may contain because of the fluctuation of interest rates. So it's a really powerful investment strategy to incorporate into one's household portfolio. And Tom, is there anything you care to add to that before we move on to our sixth and final theme here?
No, nicely done teasing out the international equity markets, Casey, because quite frankly, they have been underloved for the better part of the last decade. And certainly what's been going on in the dollar, as you mentioned, even yesterday in particular, the dollar really got trounced. That provides a double whammy for the potential increase in foreign equity. So we're excited that you talked about that, and I'm grateful that our clients understand the importance of international diversity.
Well, and so with that, speaking of change, that brings us to our final segment of today's call, which is, you know, theme six here, being that of phenomenal change on the horizon. And we want to conclude by revisiting the rhetorical question we presented back in February, which was, how has my life changed over the past 5 to 10 years, and how may it change over the next 5 to 10 plus years? Except this time, we want you to take into account how the world may be different in the years ahead because of this phenomenal change on the horizon. Because naturally, we all tend to think about how our lives may change based on our worldview today and what we see today and our own set of norms. For example, if we asked this question in 2018, few people probably would have brought up the possibility of a pandemic, but now it's something we all believe is more possible. So when we think about our lives, you know, 5, 10, 15 years from now, it's important to consider the phenomenal pace of change that we're living through and may only be in the early stages of. For example, you know, COVID could have been this generation's Pearl Harbor in a sense. So when Pearl Harbor happened in 1941, 75% of U.S. artillery was horse-drawn. Yet by the end of the war, we'd entered the atomic age, and this incredible transformation sparked a period of innovation and growth in the U.S. economy that lasted for decades. And we believe we may be in the early stages of a similar transformation, yet for very different reasons. So to spark your creative juices, here are a few ideas to keep in mind when you think about your world being different, for better or worse, as we look ahead. Now, there's a lot of research today that suggests vaccines for various cancers may be available by 2030. That would be remarkable. Healthcare innovation, treatment or diagnostic is approaching warp speed. You know, some speculate that in the 2030s, we'll wake up, check out our personal diagnostics or metabolic panel from an implant in our leg, and then rebalance any deficiencies from a secondary implant. Now, I'm currently reading Young Forever by Dr. Mark Hyman, which is about the reversing of our biological age and people living to 110 or 120 with a high quality of life. And we think about AI's impact on industries, the workforce, job displacement, and the pace of innovation being in the first few minutes of the first inning. Even during our Q&A segment on our last call, someone referenced ChatGPT. And since then, chat has been a hot topic of conversation within board meetings and around kitchen tables. It only took 2 months to reach 100 million users. That was a record until just recently eclipsed by Threads. And we're talking about renewable energy going mainstream alongside the economic and destabilizing impact of climate change. Electric and autonomous vehicles are ready. Driverless cars are on the streets, for better or worse. But the fact that they are alive is remarkable. And so the change that we're projected to experience over the next 10 to 20 years is beyond what many today can fathom. So when we think about how our lives may change, it's not just us that will. And in many respects, your portfolios and plans represent the world of today, but more so the world of tomorrow. So with that, Tom, unless you have anything to add to that, we will open it up for Q&A, and then afterwards, Tom will share a quick practice update. Tom, do you have anything to add to that?
I just want to mention the fact that we have seen a number of situations where portfolios have been entrusted to us kind of later in a client's life, and we often see that a client may be stuck a little bit. In a good case in point was my own father-in-law, who I love dearly, who was an investor for 50 years, but when we took over the reins of his portfolio, it was very much stuck in the 1980s. And we know that investing in the rearview mirror is never good, so we're always looking ahead for you and for others. And with that, Travis, could you open it up to Q&A? And folks, just please remember, first names only for compliance purposes and safety purposes. We appreciate any questions you have.
Yes, sir. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and 1 on your touchtone phone. You may remove yourself from the queue at any time by pressing star 2. Once again, that is star 1 to ask a question. We will pause for a moment to allow questions to queue.
The good news is we didn't put Travis to sleep.
We have no questions in the queue at this time. I'd like to turn the call back over to you, sir.
All right. Well, if they come in, they may come in a little bit, and that's fine. We'll stick around for a bit longer. I do have a couple closing comments just about practice and update. We're delighted, absolutely ecstatic, that Eric Kelly is back from maternity leave, so we're now a team working on all cylinders again. But in the background, we've also been working on some things despite maternity leaves and pandemics and international turmoil and Ukraine, et cetera. These include a complete redesign of our web presence, which I think you'll see and it'll be launched in the next few weeks, We're quite excited about it. We've also dramatically improved an uptick our social media presence. So if you're not following us on LinkedIn and Facebook, we encourage you to do so, because we're quite active with both our posts and those of other thought leaders that we think are important. And we've also enacted a much more disciplined fraud prevention communications campaign, because we all know that the bad guys are out there. They're getting more sophisticated, although it's been certainly an issue for the elder fraud clients that we know and try and protect. Fraud is now becoming a much more sophisticated effort on the bad guys part, and we are communicating with you more and more in that area. And if you haven't followed some of our other posts, particularly our Beyond Your Balance Sheet series, which we are now, I think, eight episodes in, I think you might find it quite useful, and it's something you might want to share with your friends and family. And thanks again for your time and interest today. We're excited that you were here with us. Sorry that there were no questions, and I guess I'll open it up again, Travis, to see if there were any came along. But we're grateful for your trust, your ongoing trust, and particularly for your support of us and going forward, and we're deeply appreciative. Thanks. Have a fine afternoon. Unless, Travis, do you have any other questions?